Chilling greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of Destin DeFell, Stick the Landing, Mercedes Luck Benedict, and Fading Point. And I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow. Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the Bermuda Triangle to Times Square to the Arctic Circle, from Nantucket to Fuck It, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and you guessed it, everything in between, it is greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout out goes to
Sharjah, United Arab Emirates, Downey, California, Antioch, Illinois, Pristina, Kosovo, Wayland, Massachusetts, and Yogyakarta, Indonesia. Before we dive in, I just want to say that my thoughts and prayers are going out to the firefighters who are fighting all these absolutely horrendous fires that are scattered about. Colorado alone, as I'm recording this, has 16 fires at least. And with as mild a winter and lack of snow that we had, this was feared but expected. Aspen Acres fire is the largest in Colorado and is at, well, when I wrote this, it was at zero containment. But now, a couple days later, it is at 13 containment. And it's almost at 90,000 acres. And it's really no sign of stopping. Now this fire, Aspen Acres, is very close to Pueblo, and it had already hit Beulah, and I believe Rye, and Colorado City. A lot of evacuations going on, and so a lot of damage. A lot of people lost their homes. My heart just truly, truly does go out to all of the people that have been affected by this. We already lost three precious firefighter lives, two women and one man. And that's three lives too many. We need rain and we need lots of it. When the South Fork, Colorado fire happened several years back, we met a firefighter. We became friends with him and he actually stayed at our house. Because when I asked him, where are you sleeping? He said, oh, just in my truck. And it's like, oh my God. So I opened up my home to him and he ended up being just this totally wonderful person. If you are able to open your home to one of these heroic firefighters, you won't regret it. You'll make a friend in the process, really. I know a lot of people and businesses and companies have been, they've been doing stuff. Like Walmart, I think, has donated several semi-loads of water, which is desperately needed right now. Little local restaurants have been serving food for free for the firefighters. I just saw in the news that a Little Caesars owner just gave away 100 free pizza pies to the firefighters and first responders. I mean, just amazing, amazing stuff. The State Fair, which I go to several times a year and live very close to, opened up their property for people to bring their horses and cattle. And I know there's another location for smaller animals. It's just so nice when people all come together and help for this, just what's becoming a huge tragedy. But anyways, thank you to everybody who's doing your fight for this fire and all the other fires. You're my thoughts and prayers, and you're amazing. Seriously. Welcome to part one of my so-called killer song series. Sadly, there are many scapegoat songs out there.
I can't say
Music is powerful. It's beautiful. And depending on the song and person, it can be straight up emotional. It can bring people to tears, from happiness to sadness and everything in between. Maybe it reminds you of a loved one who's no longer with you. Perhaps it's your song that you share with your spouse. A song can do a lot. People flock to concerts, right? Fans sing along. They buy band merch and so on. We all have our favorite bands and songs and genres. While traveling, you may partake and listen to your heart's content of music. We have playlists, movies. They use music to get people amped up. Songwriters coming up with their next song. Music is definitely a part, I think it's safe to say, of all of our lives. But when people try to blame a song for their bad actions, saying that Marilyn Manson was responsible for a fucking school shooting, or that three suicidal men are dead because of the late Ozzy Osbourne, well, it's utterly ludicrous, to say the least. Monday, March 5th, 2001, it started off as any other day for the students and teachers at Santana High School in San Diego County, California. Well, they were just going along with their business for the day. They had no idea of the terror that would soon unfold in their school, a place that up to this very point was considered a safe place, a safe haven. Enter 15-year-old Charles Andrew Williams. He walks through the school doors. He's armed with a .22 caliber revolver that he had stolen from his father's safe, which was locked, by the way. The shooting begins in the bathroom, and a student teacher and the campus security supervisor, they believe that the gunshots are fireworks, and they make their way to the bathroom immediately to investigate the matter. And when they run into Charles, he begins to shoot, and he shoots the campus security. And as both men try to run away, he continues shooting, hitting both men. And although they are both badly injured, both men will survive their injuries, thankfully. But not everybody will be so lucky. Now, according to a witness, he would leave the bathroom, he would fire his gun, and then he would run back into the bathroom. This is his safe haven, right? He's getting away. He's getting the chance to reload without being ambushed. Now, two off-duty police officers, they are there that day. And because of them, along with the San Diego SWAT team and other responders, they were able to stop the deadly shooting a short time later. Which I am sure, if you're in that situation, every single second feels like a drawn-out eternity for all of those who were in this lockdown at Santana High that fateful day. They were on opposite sides of the school, these two police officers, but once they were alerted of what was taking place, they make their way to that location. I did find some firsthand accounts from heroes who responded that day to the shootings, including Deputy Sheriff Jack Smith, who was in close proximity to the school, and he shared that when he arrived at the Santana High, that terrified students had told him where he could find the shooter. With his weapon drawn, he cautiously enters the bathroom to find a high school student reloading his revolver. Deputy Sheriff Jack Smith says this: "He had the chamber open and he was putting bullets into it. When I identified myself and told him to drop the weapon, he immediately dropped it on the floor with a big old clang." Now, at the time, he had seen two boys in the bathroom that had been shot. One was still alive, and when asked by Smith who did this, he identified Williams.
"Andy Williams shot me."
Now, first of all, oh my freaking God, he was literally reloading? I can't help but wonder, would more people have lost their lives if Deputy Sheriff Smith did not walk in those bathroom doors right then and right there? I'm sure more would have been injured for sure, but I mean, just totally insane stuff. The faith was strong, but you need- chaos and fight for survival is hunkered down at Santana High that horrible day. One fellow student who bore witness to the school shooting was a 17-year-old at the time, and his name is Chris Garcia. He says this:
I went over to the sink. I washed my hands right next to him. He didn't say anything. It was all normal. I was walking out, and I turned around, and I saw him. He wasn't talking. He was just shooting everybody in the bathroom.
Now, I don't know if Chris Garcia was a friend of his, or if they had no beef with each other, or he wanted to just spare Chris's life for some other reason, but I can only imagine how Chris felt later on going, oh my God, you know, like that could have totally been a different scenario. Now, retired Lieutenant Christine Robbins with the Sheriff's Department said this: there was a sea of kids that literally were running across the street, jumping fences, just trying to get off of campus. Robbins' husband is retired Lieutenant Paul Robbins, who was a deputy on the SWAT team during that time. And he was at a nearby gym finishing a workout when he gets a page.
It said something to the effect of active shooter, Santana High School. I just felt that by not putting on the uniform because seconds in my mind could mean lives, I just wanted to be able to respond, equipped to stop the threat as soon as I could.
Meanwhile, Deputy Perez gets a radio call of a 245, which is assault with a deadly weapon. Perez said this:
and then there was a long pause and the dispatcher said, a student's been shot.
Perez would be the man to handcuff the 15-year-old killer. He talks about the encounter.
He was really calm, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. He was really calm and he kind of smiled and said, it's just me. I'm the only one.
Now, 2 years prior to the shooting, in the wake of the Columbine shooting, the San Diego department did an active shooter drill at a local high school. So they were prepared, or as prepared as one can be during such a chaotic and terrifying scene. 13 people were shot and badly injured in Santana High School shooting, and 2, sadly, killed. I want to talk a little bit about the victims. 14-year-old Brian Christian Zucker. He was gunned down in the bathroom, shot in the head. He was a loving son and brother and described as an avid skateboarder. Find a Grave shares that he had dreams of becoming a veterinarian or a stuntman. Randy Gordon was 17 years old and he was a senior who was shot in the back and pronounced deceased at Grossmont Hospital. He was on the track team, volunteered with the Civil Air Patrol, and he would put on shows. He had dreams of joining the Navy after graduation. Several hundred mourners would attend these young men's funerals. The people who were injured ranged from ages 14 to 33 years old. One was a 16-year-old athlete who was shot in the back and managed to escape injured, running across the campus. A 15-year-old girl was shot in the arm and required not only surgery, but plastic surgery as well. An 18-year-old male suffers a gunshot wound to his mouth. A 17-year-old male had gunshot to the neck. A 17-year-old male, athlete, had a gunshot to his lung. So many excruciatingly painful injuries, and the list continues. A 15-year-old female was treated for a shrapnel wound to her knee. An 18-year-old male got hurt when he tried to protect a fellow student that had been shot with a gunshot to his left thigh. A 19-year-old male shot in his hip. A 14-year-old male was shot in the chest. A 17-year-old male, he was injured as well. His injuries are unknown. A 16-year-old female, gunshot to the finger. A 33-year-old special ed teacher and assistant football coach suffered a gunshot wound to his torso, and the campus supervisor who entered the bathroom and was shot as he fled, 22 years old, suffered from gunshot wounds as well. So, okay, get this shit. After the shootings, he shared that he didn't intend for people to die, but just make some noise, scare people, have the cops show up and do the old suicide by cop thing. But then he changed his mind last minute and he decided to go peacefully. Okay, so he did not mean for people to die? For someone who said he wasn't looking to kill anybody or hurt anybody that day, that all he wanted to do was make some quote noise and be killed by the cops, he made contact with a lot of students, hitting, as I mentioned already, the hip, mouth, chest, thigh, knee, neck, lung, torso, finger, and arm on several people. So, yeah, that doesn't really stick, okay? It's one thing if he shot the gun up in the air and it ricocheted and whatever, then yeah, okay, that's a snafu. And it's like, why did I bring a gun to school in the first place, dumbass? But no, you aimed your gun at people. You aimed and you fired and you hit your targets. Two people died. That's too many. I'm surprised not more people died with the injuries that I listed. I'm grateful that there weren't any other deaths, but two people, too many.
Minutes, something's coming down upon the head. Too late, I keep thinking something about all of the things that I must do while I'm still awake.
Now, of course, this deranged young man does not take accountability or responsibility for his deadly actions, and he decides to blame a song. Actually, according to some friends, songs. Yeah, plural. Really? So we have three supposed killer songs, look out guys, that are to be blamed for the Santana High School shooting. Not this individual, but songs. Supposed is being the important word here. Supposed killer songs. All of the songs that I will talk about right now are by one of my favorite bands, Linkin Park. Or, sorry, former. I'm sorry, you guys. I know some of you are going to totally disagree with me when I say this, but when Chester Bennington died, Linkin Park died with him. Now it has a woman singer, which is fine, but it's like you're singing their songs. Write your own songs, you guys. Write new songs. Become a new band. I know, again, some fans will agree with me, some will disagree, but to each their own. Enough of this, right? So let's talk about the songs. In the End, it's a great song. I love that song. And yes, it can be emotional. Lyrics include this: I tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all, but in the end, it doesn't even matter. Another part of the song is this: I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to me will eventually be a memory of a time when I tried so hard. Now, the second so-called killer song culprit is a song called Paper Cut. And this is actually one of my favorite songs. Here's some lyrics. And again, just reading these lyrics, it's hard for me not to sing, but I will not punish you guys today. So I will read you these lyrics, my friends. Why does it feel like night today? Something in here's not right today. Why am I so uptight today? Paranoia's all I got left. I don't know what stressed me first or how the pressure was fed, but I know just what it feels like to have a voice in the back of my head. Also, they talk about paranoia in this song, saying this: it's like I'm paranoid looking over my back. It's like a whirlwind inside of my head. It's like I can't stop what I'm hearing within. It's like the face inside is right beneath my skin. And the third song, another good one. I don't think there's one song where I was like, not a fan. This song is One Step Closer, and lyrics include, I cannot take this anymore. Saying everything I've said before, all these words, they make no sense. I find bliss in ignorance. Less I hear, the less you'll say. You'll find that out anyway. Just like before, Everything you say to me takes me one step closer to the edge, and I'm about to break. I need a little room to breathe, because I'm one step closer to the edge. I'm about to break. So yeah, songs are powerful, right? They're emotional. I covered all of this at the beginning of the episode. Charles, he was an angry man. He was pissed off at the world. He was dealing with depression. He was temperamental and often told his friends about how he wanted to actually hurt people. One friend shared,
"He always thought he was better than everybody else."
After his parents' divorce, his father gains full custody of him, lucky dad here, and they move from Maryland to California, where they move around a couple of times. Now in Maryland, he was loved, he was respected, he had friends, he was even popular. But in California, he was heavily bullied, a lot. And I mean, even some, not all, but some of the friends or so-called friends that he had bullied him at times. Now I've been there, I sympathize. But it was actually in California where I was popular and I had a lot of friends. And then the move to New Mexico where I was prolifically bullied. And yes, even by a fake group of friends that I had, these catty girls who I thought were my friends and weren't. That was horrible. And I won't get into that because it hurts too much. But the difference between yours truly and Charles Andrew Williams is that I didn't shoot up my school. Oh, believe me, I fantasized about my bullies getting horrific diarrhea and unable to get to the restroom in time. I know, immature, but whatever. Or some other things that would leave them utterly mortified. But murder? Never crossed my mind. Not once. Now, after the shooting that left two dead and several injured, it was revealed that Williams and his friends had been sexually assaulted by a pedophile named Chris Reynolds. He would buy pot and booze for the boys. Not in return for money, but for sexual favors. This perverted sicko would be caught and sentenced to 40 years, not for the molestation of Charles and his friends, but for another group of boys. It's like, how many groups of boys were there? How many victims were there? Nice bad signs, you crawl back in my bed. Tenuous hands, tracing lines on my neck. Scattered confessions slip right past your lips. But I know that your mouth is built to forget. Devil in disguise. Were there missed signs? Can this have possibly been prevented? Supposedly, days before the shooting that shook the school and the entire community, Charles seeks help with a school counselor. He tries to confide in this individual that he is depressed, that he's being badly bullied. Literally, it's a cry for help, right? A cry for help that would be sadly and regrettably, I'm sure, ignored. He is sent back to class because the counselor was too busy. He would voice his concern of being bullied several times to the counselors. And get this, you guys, he even told a security guard at the school that he was going to bring a gun. Now, he was also dealing with suicidal thoughts. And as time goes on, Charles became more depressed and even more suicidal. He is coming undone. He openly talks at school about wanting to pull a Columbine, but sadly, either the people who overheard this did not believe him or did not want to get involved or just straight up chose to ignore it. I don't know.
It's like we all have our heroes, right? Like I love our firefighters, our veterans, our police officers, and so on, right? Some people look up to and love and think that celebrities are their heroes. Baseball players, basketball players, whatever. Well, for this guy, it was more like Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. Insane!
Now, the 15-year-old school shooter had many others to blame for his actions besides Linkin Park. He would also blame his deadly actions due to being excessively bullied. Again, a lot of people are bullied and they do not shoot up a school and kill people or hurt people. He even goes as far as saying that somebody had dared him to do it. Okay, well, if somebody dared you to get a machete and try to hit as many people as possible, strike as many people as possible with it, would you do it? If somebody dared you to go off the Royal Gorge Bridge, would you do it? Come on, grow a brain. Grow a brain. Williams had written a note for his father before the shooting using lyrics from In the End. So this is the song that we for sure know that he had inspiration for or tried to at least blame, right? In the End. And he wrote this in his letter. I tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. Linkin Park responded to this horrific tragedy, saying this, like everyone else, we are extremely saddened by these events, and our hearts go out to the families and the friends to the victims. Linkin Park is not to blame. In the End is not to blame. Paper Cut is not to blame.
And you guessed it. One step closer? Yeah, not to blame.
Bullying is not to blame. Charles Andrew Williams, he is to blame. He pleads guilty. He is serving 50 years to life and is currently serving his sentence at California Institution for Men in Chino, California. He becomes eligible for parole in September of 2024, and thankfully he was denied parole. But sadly, his next parole hearing is just right around the corner next year in 2027. Now, I came upon during my research an interview by phone that was conducted by a PBS correspondent named Miles O'Brien, and they had quite the interview. And I want to read just a couple of those questions and answers now. Miles asks the killer this, I know we have a limited amount of time, so we'll cut right to it. We are talking to a lot of people about what goes on in the mind of somebody who does a rampage killing, a rampage shooting. You've had now 12 years to think about it. Take us back to that moment, and if you could tell us what had gone on in your mind at the time, that would really help us. And this was Charles's response. Even now being so far removed from everything, it's like there's really like no like coherent like thought process at the time. I mean, I can only speak for myself. I can't give you any insights to all the people that like went out and did all these mass shootings because at least in my mind, it's not really the same thing. To me, it was just like a numbness at the time. You know what I mean. And like, I couldn't really, at age 15, I couldn't really comprehend like the consequences, or I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I couldn't really comprehend like the finality of like, of the wrongness that there was going to be some severe and lifelong consequences to everything I was doing. Okay, so what? Like, really? Like, what was that? He didn't really answer the question. Numbness. I didn't know I was going to get in trouble for it. I didn't take, like, I didn't understand the consequences. The lifelong consequences. Yeah, dude, you go up and you shoot a school and you murder people. There's going to be some damn lifelong consequences. It's not going to be a little slap on the fanny for you, buddy. I mean, that's just, like, mind-blowing to me. It's like, wow, really? After 12 years sitting there in prison, that's all you have to say? Come on. I could do better in my fucking sleep. Then it's interesting because during the interview, Miles asks Charles about his opinion about the Sandy Hook school shootings. This is what he asks. What do you think when you hear about something like the Newtown shootings? What goes through your mind? And this was his response. It's just tragic, man. I want the next one to be the last one. I want like all of this because everybody is all up in arms. Oh, we got to stop this, blah, blah, blah. For like 2 weeks straight, that's all we hear about is, oh, how everybody's outraged and how big a tragedy this is. And then 2 weeks later, the news story is about how cold it's going to be. You know, I mean, like, it's the attention span of this country. It's so short that it's frustrating. Okay, well, again, I mean, at least this was like somewhat of a better answer, I guess. But it's like, okay, dude, there's always going to be some people who, again, back to my bully days, those guys and gals, oh, they pissed me off so bad. So bad. But did I get a knife and go stab them? Did I go get a gun and go shoot them? Did I even use my own weapon, my fist, and punch them in the face? Sure, I wanted to give them a good punch in the old noggin, but I didn't. There's going to be people who resort to violence. And I'm not saying like, okay, if you're getting attacked, then like fight for life kind of thing, survival. Yeah, do what you have to do to survive. Bite, punch, kick, do whatever. But because you may get your feelings hurt sometimes, you're going to like go all crazy. Okay, short attention span. You know, people are still talking about these shootings. People still remember the victims. I mean, the families still go to bed not being able to tuck their children in at night. What the hell are you talking about, Charles? Maniac. Now, what's frustrating is people like you think it's okay to go into public places like a school and shoot them up. That's what's frustrating. Maybe before doing something so drastic, so heinous, so, permanent, right? Think about it. Think about what it will do to your community. What it will do to you, turning yourself into a villain for everyone to hate. Think about what it does to your own family. Sadly, it seems like school shootings is all too common now. And one thing we see often in these horrible events is that the shooter was bullied. I can't help but think what could have been if the bullies got a life, laid off, just went on with their own business. Could it have changed things? Maybe, maybe in some situations. When you, the bully victim, go to school feeling like you have a target on your back, like you feel like a worthless piece of shit, you feel that there's nothing you can do to change things, it sucks. You feel like you hit rock bottom and that's not okay. When you, the bully, go to school with full intentions to bully that one person, like your life depended on it, well, that's certainly not okay either. And when you go to school intent on hurting as many people as possible, well, that's certainly not okay. Things have to change. You don't have to be best friends, but how about the whole acting like the other doesn't exist? That might not even be the answer either, but man, my bullies were so in your face all the time, name calling, throwing rocks, the taunting laughs, and they were related to the principal and the teachers and stuff. And to this day, my mom still says, why didn't you tell us? Why didn't you tell us? It's like, it's not that easy. It's not. But you know, then it keeps you keep it all bottled up inside, and sometimes you blow. It really does make you feel like you are the scum of the earth. Do I harbor horrible feelings for my bullies? You bet your ass I do. But I can tell you right now that each one is above ground and living their lives. No school shooting here, baby. Suicide was mentioned in today's episode. If you or someone you know is having problems, please get help. Your life is precious. Like a school shooting, suicide is severely permanent. Take a step back. Think about your family, think about your friends, think about yourself. Talk to somebody about it. There are other options. Suicide Hotline is 1-800-273-8255.
Another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all awesome. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to worry. You can binge listen to your heart's fright and delight by hitting up any of those podcast platforms such as Deezer, Spotify, CastBox, iTunes, Downcast, Apple Podcast, basically wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week.